Welcome to 60 Scales and the Truth, a podcast where amazing guitar players reflect on their lives and on how they got where they are today. My name is Niels Guns. I'm a journalist, podcast maker, and a guitar fanatic. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is a guitarist with impeccable timing. He started really young, but continues to grow. Loved by many and basically admired by all guitarists who ever heard him play. His latest album is called Speak to Me, and I'm very excited he's going to do exactly that today. Welcome to this episode, Julian Lage.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here with you.
Julian, I recently saw a post of you met up with Rachel, who's also a great guitarist.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'd like to start this interview with a quote by him. Maybe we can reflect on that a little bit. He said, he posted this on his Instagram, right?
Okay.
Julian is one of the most kind, humble, and down-to-earth musicians I've ever met. And I think his kindness comes through in his playing. He has one voice, and it's the same whether he's playing or telling a story. And I read that, and I was thinking, because is that true? What is your thought about that?
Well, you know, I can't say. I have no perspective on that. Rhett is incredibly sweet to say that, you know, and I'm a great admirer of his playing and everything he does for the community. I will say, though, that I believe that as people and as musicians, we tend to kind of show off the same sides of ourselves. You know, we show our vulnerabilities or the kind of how we feel about risk and taking chances, our sense of humor, our sense of drama, our sense of narrative. I think those qualities are inherent to us. They can obviously be developed. They can be refined. They can be cultivated. They can be nurtured. They can be suppressed, kind of, but not usually. So I would say that I believe in a holistic sense of oneself. I remember being a kid and taking note that there were kind of like two paths about developing one's voice. You know, one was that you come into the world of guitar music with no voice. You're nothing, and you have to craft it. You know, and the other route that I remember hearing a lot about from teachers was kind of the opposite. It says, well, you always have your voice, but you have to kind of reveal it. You have to get rid of any obstacles that might be in the way of your truest expression just kind of flooding out of you. And though I see merits in both, I think the latter is probably how I think about it. I think I, in many respects, sound the same as I did when I was a little kid. The big differences I see are obviously life experience, along with just trying to kind of get rid of certain things that maybe got complicated along the way, untie some knots that got tied along the way.
But the reason I was thinking about, because Red also says, you seem to be quite humble and you seem to be quite soft spoken. But if I hear you play, you just mentioned the word risks as well.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. That's like a very risky note to play, right? Like,
sure.
Like, wow, where does he get that from? And then I'm thinking, whoa, is there one voice, right? And like, is the guitar player Julian, who's taking those risks as a player, and that soft spoken person, like, I don't know you, right? So that's why I'm asking.
Exactly. No, it's a fair question. Well, it's a very fair question. I mean, I think... I do think it brings up another question, however, which is, you know, what, when we're talking about a person's voice, what side of them are we looking at? You know, and I think you can have someone who's soft-spoken. It doesn't really say anything about the person's character, does it? You know, though it's tempting, you know, to say, well, this person is that way and they must play this way, but just from my side of experience, it's all very much the same. You know, it does feel similar, and I think also another part of that is this isn't really about me alone. It's about whether it be in conversation like the two of us right now, or musically when I'm with the band or on stage, or with the audience for that matter. It's always an interaction. You know, it's relative. In other words, I'm in relation to something and to an environment, to a situation, as are those involved. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just something so nuanced and beautiful about that space between, you know, us. And I think that's where you get to really understand each other is through the, just like we're doing in this room right now. So I think that's more of a marker of things than anything I might possess or any way I might behave. It's really...
It is interesting that you seem, people seem to be different when there's somebody else in the room, right?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
So you could ask, who am I if I change if there's somebody else, right?
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's all relational. I think of it that way. Mm-hmm. And music, I think, is one of the great teachers of that, especially because we're dealing with sound, right? So you can play the guitar and you think, okay, well, I'm the guitar player. I play the notes. I pick the way it sounds. And none of that's true once it leaves your guitar or it leaves the speaker, because now you're in a space and it's bouncing off the walls and it's coming back different. And there's, I mean, we're always interacting with environment, always. So though I can't speak much to all of the comment that Rhett said, I can say I the consistent thing for me is I'm fascinated with integrating into a space and a moment and frankly just trying to be present for it, whatever it may have to hold. So it's and that comes down to the musicians I play with too. I'm lucky to surround myself with people who are just brilliant and feel similarly and also challenge me and push me and support me. I'm lucky, you know.
I saw you play 2 days ago and as an audience you can feel you're there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, good. That's good.
I mean, it's a simple observation, but it has many layers as well.
Well, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. It does. It's I feel lucky we play a kind of music. We're jazz musicians and we're improvisers and we have these songs and we have all this stuff that we're, hopefully the point is about just us being there, you know, and we happen to play instruments and it happens to be music from this or that record. But it's a study of presence. It really, really is. That's how it feels to me.
That relates also to a guitar lesson of yours I saw online. I was like, oh, what's Julian going to teach? But that was about the resonance of the guitar in your body.
Right.
So basically for the listeners who didn't see it, you're kind of explaining on all parts of your body, where do you feel the guitar? And that way you could make the tone bigger.
That's right.
And that's, for me, the first time I saw a lesson like that, you know,
that's
like,
cool,
where's
right?
the lick? No, there's no lick.
There's no lick. No lick. Yeah, that's...
It's a meditational kind of approach as well, right?
I suppose so, you know. It's about... the way I look at it, I'll frame it this way. The way I look at it is that it's very tempting, especially as a student or a practitioner of guitar, to feel like you're underneath something, that you have to like get on top. You have to emerge from this place you are, this deficiency, place of deficiency, and kind of conquer it, you know? And that's certainly one approach, you know? And there are times where that feels more real than not. But I think from another perspective, music is very forgiving. It's very generous. It's very universal. And I feel that way about the guitar too. And so often, at least in my experience, you're learning the guitar, and a teacher tells you to do something and they say, well, you could be better at this. And you go, okay. And then you work on it and you may or may not get better, but very often we forget, or I've forgotten to ask, is it true? You know, is that diagnosis true? Is my time bad, or do I really have to overcome that? Again, not to say that they're wrong, but to say in order to really dive deep, I think we have to know, we have to believe it too. We have to kind of confirm the diagnosis and go, wait, the only way I can really know if what they're saying is true is if I do some tests and I inquire. And that thing you're talking about, playing a chord on the guitar and seeing where it resonates in your body as you play it and noticing that the more you play, often the more you can feel it, is a way of attenuating your system, but frankly, your nervous system to what you're actually playing. It's a nice place to start rather than saying, well, I have bad tone and I need good tone. Because it's
what
just,
is bad anyway?
Well,
right?
That's I mean, you just have to know. Often, more times than not, it's that stuff is symptomatic of being dissociated from the physical experience of playing, or you're looking for a connection point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do believe we're inherently good. Mm-hmm. I really do, and it's about cultivating that the best we can. To me,
reminds me of quite a big swing you did on stage in Antwerp, and it.
Oh, and I just missed the note
missed
entirely.
It, but it was okay.
It was great.
Yeah, because everybody, you on and your drummer Dave King and Jorge,
Jorge Roeder.
Roeder, yeah, he was like. And that's funny, right?
Oh, because it's amazing. It's
you could say it's a bad note, but the experience was great.
It's the best thing of the whole night. I love that.
So you remember that note?
Yeah, I remember missing it by a mile. No, I mean, it's I think the notion that what we're doing is communicating, you know, and what we're doing is being as generous as we can with what we've got. That's important to me. And I think it's, I think... As a fan, because that's really it, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a fan of music. I just love music and I love the guitar. I think I'm seeking the things I respond to as well. You know, a sense of human nature. You know, one of the coolest things about instrumental music to me is that it's rather abstract. You know, it's... And that can be true of lyrical music too. But we're dealing abstraction. We're dealing with tension and release. We're dealing with... I don't know, so many things that are hard to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so what excites me the most in that realm is just drama, you know, expectation, redirection of attention and listening, always listening. Yeah, human stuff, you know, the stuff that makes for any good story. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you remember that too. I was just talking about it with Jorge. I was like, that was crazy. I loved it.
Because it was the biggest swing.
Yeah, you thought I was going to just really stick the landing and I didn't. But
there's no mistakes in that perspective,
no,
right?
No, it was amazing. It was
like that?
No, it's what you live for. Really, it's the best.
So, that takes confidence as well to perceive a moment like that in that way, right?
Well, I suppose I'll tell you this much. I don't think of myself in terms of confidence, you know. I don't think of a lack of confidence. I just never really used, I haven't ever gotten into that as my framework. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it suits a lot of people, you know, to say I'm secure enough in what I do, and this is, you know, I don't really think in those terms, you know.
That's good, I suppose.
Well,
I
mean, it's
that word that is surrounded with a lot of stress. I guess
it can be. I think it, at the very least, I think it comes with a certain amount of agenda. You know, here's what it's supposed to be, and then here's all the ways it'll go wrong. It's kind of a dualistic. It's a little bit almost too simple. I think there's a lot in the middle that I'm fond of. You know, let's just go play. Well, it's whatever. You know, and part of the challenge always is letting go of the previous show or the previous experience or the previous expectation. And that too, that is very dependent on the musicians you play with, people you can trust, that you just say they are going to show up and just be wonderful no matter what they do. That sets a beautiful tone. You know, if that's the temperament and you can share that, there's not much you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean you don't struggle or, you know, have difficulties. It just means it's, I don't know. You're okay. You're just okay.
Maybe you can rewind a little bit. I was in your life. I'm wondering, is there any time in your life that you as a guitar player, it went from playing skills to communicating to that layers you're basically talking about just now?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I don't remember a moment. No, I mean, I've had probably many moments though where I, within a given, from one day to the next, something changes and you kind of, by the grace of whatever in the universe, you remember that, yeah, this is about communication. This is about sharing. It's not about my agenda. There's been so many times like that. I remember, and I've spoken about it some before, but I must have been 17, 18 years old, and I was with Gary Burton's band. And We were playing a lot, you know, every night, and it was a long tour, and it was one of my first tours, and I loved it. I was nervous, right? So I practiced a lot. I practiced a whole lot. And in the day or at the airport, I'd practice. I would bring my guitar with me on the plane in those days. And I remember Gary Burton saying, you know, you got to stop practicing. You're practicing too much. And I kind of took it as a compliment, and it wasn't. You know, I thought he was saying, you're doing too much. Like it sounds great. And he really was saying, no, I can hear it. When you're on stage, I hear what you've practiced, and I need you to drop that. Respond mm-hmm. to the music that we're playing, you know, mm-hmm. not what you're working on. Mm-hmm. And so that's one such example where I thought, oh, of course, right? It's not about premeditation, or, you know, there are things you want to work on, sure, but even then it's, you know, what you're able to do as a guitar player and what you want to say as a musician aren't necessarily the same. And very often, the more we're able to do as a guitar player, the easier it is to forget that you still have to have something to say. You have to have a point of view. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's kind of a spectacle about the instrument alone. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's tremendous. But it just so happens that I've been around mentor figures who kind of remind me from time to time, like, hey, you know.
Yeah, and anyone in particular?
I've always felt that way around Joey Barron. You know, we've been playing a lot of music together. Same with John Zorn. Mm-hmm. Same with Joe Lovano. Like I said, Gary Burton. I mean, or when I played with Jim Hall years ago. These are all musicians that, whether they said it or not, when we played, I got the message loud and clear that this is... The question is, what does the music need? Not what can I do, and I hope the music needs it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's fun, because sometimes you'll say, what does the music need? And what drops in is that it needs something you can't do. Mm-hmm. And that's good news. It means either, you know, you either just lay out or you go work on it. But that there is wisdom at play, you know, in the music. It's about that. It's about the music. So, and I feel like I've gotten that message from all those people I mentioned, and then some.
Well, what role did you mention Jim Hall?
Yeah.
He was very important to you.
Extremely.
Right?
Jim's my guy, you know, I mean, as he is for so many of us, I know. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to meet Jim when I was a kid. I was about 11 years old, and we became quite friendly, and he'd call me every few months, and we'd talk on the phone. This is when I was growing up in California, and him living in New York. And then when I moved to New York, we played together, and we did some shows, and, spent a lot of time together. And oh, I mean, to me, he's just the ultimate of modernity, you know, a truly modern guitarist and a conceptual artist, you know, as a composer, as an arranger, as a band leader, as just someone who thinks about what we do in a unique way. To me, I won't ever get over how special he is.
Do you have that role as a mentor, so to say, also for other musicians right now?
Well, it's hard for me to perceive of it that way. I've been lucky to teach for so long, you know, and teaching really is just, for me, has been an excuse to meet other musicians and guitarists and kind of learn about their thought processes and hopefully just combine our forces to work through difficulties. Jim's presence is so godlike, you know, to me, that I really don't, I couldn't see anyone in that position except him, you know, mm-hmm. My father that way too. I mean, there's only the few, obviously my mother too. It's as far as my relationship to students and others, I really have no sense of it. I don't. I just know that we're kind of all figuring it out together.
There is no... It works differently for everybody, I suppose.
It does.
Right? There's one trick
But it's fun to, you know, on tour in the States, usually I do master classes at every concert before the concert starts. Mm-hmm. So if we do, you know, 15 shows, 15 states, I see 15 different communities. And oh, it's amazing, because the questions are different in every place, you know, there, and I don't know what that means or what that says sociologically, but it's a reminder that we are all coming at it from different angles. And that's probably the biggest thing I feel is that, my biggest takeaway, I should say, is that as practitioners, as guitar players, as students of the music, we learn just as much, if not more, from our colleagues and the people who know maybe just a little more than us, or maybe a little less than us, but they know it in a different, on a Les Paul instead of an acoustic, or instead of a telly, or whatever it may be. Those communities of thought are, I think, where a lot of growth can happen. And it's just as important, if not more important, than having a singular teacher, you know, or say, well, you go to this person and they show you the way. And I think that's great too. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky to experience that in various forms as well. But I do like people learning from each other, especially people of like experience. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really important. So then in those situations, I get to almost be like a facilitator to kind of bring up, point the conversation in a certain direction, or kind of cultivate a certain perspective, but it's by no means me, you know, dishing out the way to do it. Cause I would, that would be, well, that just wouldn't be right.
You just mentioned your father and your mother also said the word facilitator.
Yeah.
Did they create an environment that it never really felt as a choice to become a guitar player, or
it was very open. But but maybe as important to your question is that I'm the youngest of five kids, you know, so I've got three sisters and a brother. So everyone was doing something. I happened to play guitar, you know, and I could share that with my father because he started at the same time I did. So we would play together and take lessons together. My mother's a brilliant artist, as is my dad. All my siblings are just tremendous, you know, tremendously talented too. So yeah, there was a sense of like, well, there's space for this. And there was always space held and protected for me to do what I would do. You know, that's tremendous. But no, it was without any pressure. Also, at least to me, I think it's important. I grew up, and I've said this, I know, a lot, but it bears saying again that, you know, I grew up in that generation just before the internet. You know, and before social media. So it was very easy to be bored, you know what I mean? Or just sit, or not be, but just sit there and go, well, I want to do something, so I'll play guitar. Well, there's nothing else that I was particularly interested in.
The first time I had my first guitar, I was 14, and the first feeling I had was, I never have to be bored again.
Isn't that great? Yeah, man. Yeah, you have a friend.
That was
a great
feeling.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
You're engaged, you know?
Yeah.
And there's another side to that too, though. It's like, so now you're able to devote yourself, hopefully, and it's circumstance, right? I'm lucky that I was able to, and had the resources to study and be with, you know, my family took care of me. I mean, I'm lucky. I'm really lucky, very fortunate. The other side of it being that I could also experience that in privacy. So there was no sense of, okay, I'm getting deeper into this, I should really film it and put it on the internet, or I should, you know, there was and I was kind of in the public eye, and it wasn't that much. I played on TV a couple times. There was a documentary, but even in that film made about me when I'm a kid, I don't actually play the guitar in it.
But that's actually interesting. If you'd be a 5-year-old playing guitar and quite decently, and you'd be all over the internet.
You'd probably
right
be all
now,
over
right?
the internet. That seems to be the way it's going.
Yeah.
And I see it, and I have no, I can't speak to it being good or bad. All I can say is that, boy, am I happy I didn't have to do that. Because basically from when I was a kid till I was in my 20s, I was just a secret. You know, I'd play shows, I'd be on records, but then the show was over, it go home, done. There was nothing else. Just keep working. So that was a blessing for me, at least for my constitution.
Does it distract you nowadays, though, in the internet?
I'm still, no. I mean, I manage to keep my head out of pretty much everything.
What's your secret?
Well, I have a team of people, and they help me with things on the internet and social media, and we work together. But no, I don't really have a taste for it. I don't crave it. But that's not to say that's a good thing. It just happens to be my relationship to it.
Yeah, I guess your relationship is like that, at least you seem to be in control, right? The internet seems to be in control.
That's right.
Do I really want to see this?
Yeah,
this
thing? No, it's hard. Yeah. You can't unsee it sometimes. Yeah. No, so it's true. I do have that responsibility to just kind of do my best to take care of myself. Mm-hmm.
So you said I'm very fortunate to have had those parents who created that environment. Like Jim Hall was somebody very important. Are there any other people that you say, well, they open sure. things up for me? Yeah?
Well, there was a lot. My first guitar teacher, I had several guitar teachers, Robert Jones, Chris Pimentel, all wonderful teachers in the community I grew up in. And then Randy Vincent, that was the guy I studied with the most in depth. Mm-hmm. You know, I was for years from when I was 8 until I was in my teenage years. And we would play gigs together and record together and do it. I mean, that's my partner, you know, mm-hmm. and in so many ways. And that I look back on that now and go, how lucky, you know, because that was such a robust education. It wasn't lightweight. It was all in twice a week for many hours every time. And and so I would say, without a doubt, Randy and his wife Kathy opened so many doors, because it was not only that experience, but then we would go to hear concerts at night together, and they would introduce me to people and that I could study with. I mean, just beautiful, really special. David Grisman was another person. First person I recorded with professionally was David Grisman, hugely influential. Someone who is a total innovator, you know, as a mandolinist, as a band leader, as a conceptual artist, again, just like Jim, you know, basically made his own kind of music, dog music, which mm-hmm. combined all these American traditions with jazz. And and then that led to knowing and playing with Bela Fleck. And then in my college years, I studied with Mick Goodrick, who's mm-hmm. so profound for all of us. And that was another experience like that.
But your wife is a musician as well,
absolutely,
right?
Margaret Glassby.
What did you learn from her? Could you pinpoint something that you think, wow?
Yeah, she's the best. I mean, Margaret and I met in college, so we kind of, in many respects, we've grown up together. You know, we really have. So she has an amazing capacity for not being impressed by anything that's topical. She's such a great songwriter and guitar player and singer, and she understands narrative and storytelling in like emotional impact. What does it feel like? Is it grabbing me, you know? And I've seen her do this time and time again, where she can just cut to the heart of the listener, cut to the heart of the music, cut to the heart of the message, and deliver it with such grace, you know? And it's a huge inspiration because I want to do that too, you know, and I try to do that. And, that's one of so many things that we've kind of explored together. Just her love and companionship as a partner is kind of, that's my whole world. Mm. So,
but that must be interesting in your relationship, that you also bond with music, right?
Yeah. I mean, with art, you know, because they're principles that I think we both, notice in music, you know, literature, movies, it doesn't matter what it's, visual art. They're just kind of principles of like, is this working or not? Is this connecting? Is it not? And I think we do have an honest dialogue. We have an honest dialogue about whether something has that impact, and whether it's something outside of us or it's something we're working on independently or something we're working on together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great privilege, you mm-hmm. know. And just the sense of humor with it all, that it's, you know, we're just kids kind of figuring it out. And I think that's a really lovely thing that I'm always reminded of, just to take the pressure off. We're all kind of hunting it down, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's a good lesson altogether anyway, right?
Yes.
Get some pressure off. Because when I first saw that that Margaret produced one of your albums, I was like, and Charlotte, I love you very much, but I cannot imagine you for producing something I do.
Is that right? Like, yeah, everyone's different. Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Production is cool. You know, production is different for everybody who's a producer.
Mm.
They're the producers who obviously, help beforehand. And then when the session comes along, they just kind of let you do your thing. There's the producers who book the studio, hire the musicians, even the producers who write the music. Mm-hmm. With Margaret, it's some combination of all of it. She's really the, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, you play. And mm-hmm. more often than not, so far in our experience of production, it's, we'll play something and I'll say, I think I got to do it again. She'll be like, you're done. That was it. You know, a good producer can kind of protect you from yourself too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice when that comes from a place of love, you know, and nothing else. It really has to be, in my opinion, it comes down to trust and love. Do you, can you relinquish that kind of control?
To let that go, right?
But it's not as much of a burden if you trust the person. Yeah, you say, well, hey, I would do the same for her. You know, I would be able to tell, okay, yeah, you're good. You're done. Trust me. You might be in it now, but tomorrow you're going to be so proud of that, you know, just, you know, or you're so close and there's a thing and I, you know what I'm talking about. And can you just try for that? Mm. It's a version of that, you know.
That must be very, like I said, special in your relationship to have those moments as well.
Oh,
right?
It's like, amazing. Like I said, it's a privilege. I count my blessings. Mm. I really, really do.
Hey, a returning topic in this series is a question from one player.
That's
to
right.
The other. So Neely Brosh.
Awesome.
She asked you this.
How did you find the confidence to be fully yourself? Because he's so himself and he's so unique and he does things that nobody else does, but that takes courage in a way. What got him to the point where he felt like no fear to get behind himself fully?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you, first of all, for that question. I'm very humbled that you would ask that of me. It's so funny because if I reflect on it, I have no idea. I don't remember a moment where that, you know, distinctly changed but what you say about it resonates with me. You know, the notion that, yeah, there can be kind of a conscious commitment, maybe you could say, towards following what you want to do and putting all your weight behind it. That for me has so far been a perpetual process. I feel like I'm often reminded of it over and over again, like, right, what do I want? Not what can I do? Not what seems appropriate or what do I think this situation wants, but what do I crave? And I know we spoke of this a little bit before, but since I lack any real relationship to the notion of confidence, I would say the attempt I make is to kind of basically put myself only in situations to the best of my ability where I have to show up in that way. And it's and that sometimes means saying no to things that you doesn't feel comfortable to say no to. Yeah. I remember feeling this when I moved to New York. I was kind of playing with everybody and trying out all this stuff, and I loved it. And I played with so many people. And then over the years, there's been a little bit of refinement of, okay, I like working with this person because I love working with John Zorn because I don't really have to think about how to put myself into the music. He leaves so much room for it and also inspires it that it's going to be there. I love playing with my trio, or I love working with Joe Henry, or I love working with Margaret. Or Chris Eldridge. These are all people with whom I don't actually feel like the question is warranted. Mm-hmm. I could not be myself around them. I don't know what it is. It's the way they listen to me. It's the way they look at me. It's the way they talk to me. Mm-hmm. It's the way the music is written. So that's been kind of my singular focus. And of course, there are times where you don't feel like you can do that for one reason or another. That's understandable. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I've been fortunate that I just kind of keep trying to put myself in situations where I have no choice. Mm. I set a record date. I've got to write 12 songs and the band is hired. What am I going to do? You know, and then you get to work. And also the only thing I would say is that I think we know when we're accessing our truest self. You know, we know it. And to that end, I'm really curious about just how I can keep my antenna up. So that as things are going down, I can get a read on it. You know, there's been many times I record myself a lot, or I used to a lot more. And I listen back to shows and I would listen back with the question of like, not is it good or is it bad, but yeah, how does my experience of listening differ from my experience of playing? And that question was always very helpful for me, at least, because often I would hear something and say, well, maybe it feels a little flat, or like I'm not being myself completely, or it's not vibrant enough, or whatever it is. And then I would think back and try to remember what it felt like. And often those moments, I was very worried. You know, I had an agenda. I got to do this to be right. Got to play this way to play the right. So, you know, I was in a story. And so the practice for me has often become, can I drop the stories? Can I notice there's a story going on? Mm-hmm. I need one more chorus to really kill it. You know, mm-hmm. no, I don't. It's bull, you know, mm-hmm. but it feels real, you mm-hmm. know, it feels real. So I think I'm of the school, rather than thinking I, you know, having courage or confidence more, can I just be, can I question everything? Mm-hmm. Not in an annoying way, you know, mm-hmm. but just say, you know, one of my teachers says it so eloquently. She says, is it true? Mm. You know, is it true? I've been playing too long. Is it true? Is it, this song is, it needs something else. Is it true? And the beautiful thing is because it's a question, the answer can be yes. They can say, yes, you're playing too long. Stop it. Or it can be like, no, you're cool. But once again, there's that producer player relationship. Mm-hmm. However, this time it's just between myself and myself, mm-hmm. you know?
But that it really resonates with me, you saying my lack of notion of confidence, that yeah. to a lot of people that would seem the most confident thing you could ever say.
Right? I'm the wrong guy. You know, Krishnamurti, the great philosopher and writer, I know he would talk about confidence as being, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but I remember, at least if I'm remembering correctly, there was a notion in his writing that, you know, it's very dangerous. You know, a confident person is kind of a dead person. You're unavailable. And I think being available is far more interesting to me than being right. And I think this is true of anyone who's had any life experience, which everyone has, around, you know, thinking you were doing the right thing and then realizing there was some information you didn't have. You know, you didn't have the full story. Mm-hmm. And hopefully with that comes a certain sense of compassion. We do the best we can. That's all it is. Sometimes you have all the data, sometimes you don't. But the notion that it should be galvanized in a confident way is also, I get worrisome. I just think it's the last thing I really want to be is confident.
You said you like questions.
Yeah, well, right? Sure. It's alive. You know, it's just like what you and I are doing right now. This is not a declaration. It's a conversation. So for me, at least, that leaves the door open for growth and curiosity. And, also I think reveling in, inherent beauty in moments. You know what I mean? Like, I think of this a lot. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that even in a given environment we're playing in, where we are inheriting a space. You know, you saw me the other night in a beautiful hall in Antwerp, and that space was as much of the story as I was, right? So you inherit circumstances and you have to navigate them. And that's why it's really good to be open, because they're not the same night to night. Mm-hmm. And especially with jazz music and improvised music, it's you kind of need to die and be born again in a way. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's the tradition that I've been following for so many years. Mm-hmm.
And also because at one point in the set you said, okay, this last song was Northern Shuffle, and the song before that, you didn't even know.
I forgot.
You forgot. I was like, he's so much in.
Yeah.
At that moment, that he doesn't know the song before.
Just have a terrible memory too.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. Well, you know, we the songs we play are it's fun because we've made a lot of records as a trio and a band with Dave and Jorge. So we can jump from a song from one record to a song from another record. And in a way that we're not playing them like the record per se. They're, you know, I think Ornette Coleman would that be considered harmelodic in a way where things kind of, again, it's, I shouldn't be the one to describe harmelodics because I think it's a little bit different for everyone. But the notion that the music is a springboard, the songs are a springboard, but the temperament, the emotional temperament, the rhythmic temperament, the melodic temperament, and the narrative and the harmony, of course, those are all more moment specific. They're not, we don't have to go play it like the record. And I find that incredibly exciting, you know, and challenging. So you happened to see us on a night where that was in full effect.
I mean, I'll be seeing you tonight again.
That's great.
So I'm very curious
me
if
too.
It's all true.
Who knows, man? Who knows?
Well, one other thing that before we wrap this up, I was wondering what happens, because sometimes I'm not sure if it's deliberate or not, but you, both of your hands go off the guitar.
They go
in the air. Is that a... Let me rephrase. Can you tell me what happens on those moments?
Well, I think it's a simple thing, at least from my point of view, it's just, I need to just pause and listen for a second, you know, playing is so physical, obviously, and there's so much movement involved, and movement affects hearing. You know, if you're moving, you hear things differently. If you're still, you hear them differently. Taking the hands off the guitar. Yeah. That's a good way to just kind of I don't even want to say reset, because you don't set into something, but it helps you reconsider. Also often the momentum of a phrase or the momentum of anything we play isn't entirely felt until the phrase stops, you know? So there's that old saying, a phrase begins the second the line stops. Like if it doesn't ever stop, it's not really phrase. There's points of interest, but it's the negative space after one phrase before another, that's where I think there's an emotional power. So I also like stopping and just going, what does this even feel? I don't know what impact this is. What impact is this line having? The beautiful thing is that I can stop and the band is so good and great and on it. And, you know, I'm far from the most interesting thing happening in that moment. So I do have faith that I can stop, and what Dave and Jorge are doing is just as, if not more compelling than what I'm doing. And then I get to re-enter the stream, hopefully. I would say that's probably my best attempt at an answer to that.
Did that ever enter in your playing in a certain moment that you thought like, oh, this gives me that kind of reset?
Well, I think maybe just organically, I started to notice that, you know, if my hands are too close to the guitar, I'm going to want to play. So, you know, Jim Hall used to say, don't just play something, sit there, you know, to flip around the old saying. So I think there's something like, it's nice to remember, you know, we're still engaged whether we're contributing notes or not, but it's a practice, you know. And there's other times where the opposite is really essential, where play the guitar, you know, go like just really keep moving your body. That's what the music needs. Again, it's all about what is the music in that moment and in that space ask of us. I really believe that. Sometimes you just got to kind of take your hands off the guitar.
So players, if you want to be really good.
Yeah, don't touch it.
Hey, Julian, it was a privilege to talk
to you. Likewise, a total pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your time. And listeners, thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.